Has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
I'll move.
Okay, second. All in favor?
Aye.
And I can't vote because I wasn't here.
Okay. Okay, so that's that. Now, Tim, if you don't mind, can I just take the first resolution out of order and have a series of debates? So if we can move forward for one moment in the agenda and look at Resolution 197, approving the execution of the contract in excess of $50,000 issued by the county for non-profit extension Department of the Environment. And that's to provide local coordination and technical assistance for flood hazard mitigation planning in the Shokan watershed is passed through from the DEP to Cornell. Thank you for the question. And second discussion? Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Ken? Okay. So, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Okay, let's go back to the RA this mentioned here too.
Can I help? Is Ken Monk on?
No, Ken's not coming. Okay. So, Ken, do you want to give an update for
him? Yeah, two things. We're all set for the 20th. The county was very gracious to us and have bus, but they didn't last too long. So we're going to be leaving the offices. I talked to Sue McIntyre, the director up there. She said, you really need to get here by 9:30, the absolute latest, to see if maybe a bus can accomplish the operational PMSW. So she says we're in early morning operations. So everyone should arrive at the agency by 7, because we really want to leave promptly, but probably by 7:15. According to MapQuest, it's like an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
So that we should arrive somewhere around 8:45 to 9 o'clock, so that ballpark, so we should be there before the 9:30. So we're all set with that. It was quick notice to the county, but Bob Stone was really working with us. So I have sent a nice email to make it for him.
What is the resort? I'm sorry, I was going to miss
it. It is Delaware County. Here, finish up. They're going to accomplish it. They have an MSW accomplishing operation. The only one in the state. I thought it was the only one at the last meeting. I confirmed that was true. Aren't you guys the only one to do this? They said, yeah, it's the only one in the state. Plus, we're the only one in the state that also finances their solid waste operations through 1% sales tax. We're the only one in the state because of that.
So what technology did they use?
It's a technology out of Canada, a Canadian company that made it, that created the machine. It's a long tube, and it keeps the MSW up. It's going down the tube.
And does it have to scream or it falls out?
Yes. Yes. I don't remember the name of the company.
They
only take Delaware County garbage.
I mean, honestly, I don't remember what the name of it is, but we will find out. I do know that they're not approved to use the common practice for human consumption, but they are used a lot of the DOT applications behind them. But you'll talk all about that.
And you expect that, you told me you expect that we'll be back at the agency somewhere between 1 and 30.
That's what I'm thinking. It's probably going to be enough. But I'm thinking, if we get there on 9, she's going to do a brief introduction. She takes right out, show us the compost, show us the landfill. If we're there at 9, I can't imagine we'll be there anywhere maybe 2.5 hours, which is at 11:30. So from 11:30, we should be back around 1.
Okay. And maybe we should, I can send an email out, but maybe we should advise people to bring drinks and snacks just so that we don't face that situation like last time. If we really need to get back or we're running late, we have a busload of starving people.
The other two things, too, is she did mention rain boots and she's spring clothes, you don't mind getting dirty. have my address, he says, if you would just put it in, assume the city attorney. The other thing that probably should have been was maybe extend an invitation to their legislators and see what they would follow the system on their own to come and meet you guys. So I mentioned it to Sue, and they don't have a legislative form of government. So,
what day is this?
Wednesday. That'll be from 7:00 to 7:00, some of it can't get back around 1:00 or 1:30. So, but I did extend that offer. Charlie asked me to do that, so I did reach out to Sue, and I said, I don't know what, if you report to me, they're a county department, they're not a public entity like us. So, she said that she does, there is a 4 or 5 supervisors that oversee the solid waste operations, and she also sent an invite to them, so I don't know that you'll be there. And so the legislators can talk to the legislators.
Yeah, they're county supervisors.
Right.
Well, they're board of supervisors, you know, I mean, they, I'm going to check the words here quickly.
Hey, you know,
I don't know every one of them, but I know Tim Eisel is the chairman.
Tracy, I just thought it might be a good idea if you could talk to your counterpart up there in reference to maybe the possibility at some point in the future of sharing their landfill, even their costs. I mean, if we could somehow bring some of our solid waste to their landfill, we could then maybe participate in financing it at some point. It would still be far cheaper than what we're doing right now as far as Seneca Meadows is concerned. And I just thought it might be a good idea if we have that mindset as we're sitting down with them and talking to them, that maybe we could open some doors.
Well, I think even, I'm not sure how they're enabling legislation and, you know, just the whole concept, because as Rich said, I think all of their waste, they only allow Delaware County waste currently, correct? So, and I would imagine that came with a lot of deep thought in terms of, because that, for any county that was looking at siting a landfill, either in their own county or regionally, I think would really need to consider, like, are we doing this, are we going to offset it with money from out of the county, or are we going to keep it in county and make it last longer?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're thinking through those plans, you're looking at the landfill in terms of its life differently if it's from waste only within the county. That said, I mean, maybe they would be open, but I certainly think it'd be worth talking to them about their process, how they got to the place of siting the landfill, how they made the decision to have this MSW compost. I mean, it's always helpful to talk to counterparts who are doing things at a parallel but very different track.
I think the life of it right now is about 50 years.
That's
what I was speaking to one of the guys up there, and he said, you know, their projections are, it'll last another 50
years. Do you have any ideas to the footprint?
I don't.
You don't?
I mean, I don't know nothing about it.
Those are the things that we should want to find out, because
I don't know how
their footprint is expandable, and if, of course, it's going to cost money to expand it, it might be in our best interest to talk in terms of maybe that funding coming from Ulster County to expand their footprint so that we can, instead of going 250 miles, go 50 miles.
Right.
I mean, those are the things that maybe we should be thinking about. Thank you.
Thank you. I do think it's worth, if they're willing to come out and talk to us, that'd be great. And thank you, Tim, for setting it up. And it was last minute and a lot of things.
Like
possibly
Grandma Lester,
but she's
going to be
a little tough.
I know the director up there, when I was first setting up with her, she said, I'll get two or whatever you want. She was trying to make that on Wednesday. She said, that works best for us. I didn't ask why. So I threw out those 2 days in June, and I know you said you couldn't make it. I was trying to get it into July a little bit, but nothing kept happening. And I talked to Tracy a little bit, mostly for my vacations and so forth.
Yeah. I think July was going to be a really, it seemed to me like July would be a dicey and questionable month.
I don't think it's
start to be. So I felt like we should go with Atlanta, but I also think I mentioned to you, talked to Tim, and Tim said that he would help coordinate a smaller tour later, and if you can't make this one, I mean, I hope you can, but I totally understand. Yourself and other legislators who are still interested, we can...
It's all a question of whether they'll let me plug in my Prius
when I get there to recharge the battery.
Oh. Well, yeah, we did use
that's only if the electricity comes from the trash, right?
I did look at June 11th, 18th, and 25th, and several people couldn't make it on the 25th, and several people couldn't make it on the 11th. So much the 18th seemed to fit most everybody. I guess they didn't make the box that day anyway.
Okay. Yeah. And room is not an issue. It's sort of a... Is it a bus?
Yes.
Okay, so is there room on the bus with a couple more people?
Oh, yes, 25.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably a 20. If it's the same bus we took last time, it was 20, 25. I told them, this is not going to be a problem, because I told them I need a bus to fit at least 15, assuming, I think they've got 11 confirmed, or 12 confirmed. So assuming that there might be two or three people that may jump on the last minute. So I asked Bob, if you need a bus at least 15. So
I wonder, if someone is interested, I don't know if you can make June 18th, but I don't know if we could also extend the...
I don't have my calendar. I may have a real estate person that day.
But
have to check.
If there's space, if, you know, when I'm looking back at the Oneida Herkimer visit, I mean, I really think we should eventually coordinate another visit, and I think it would behoove every legislator to see that same tour, so... to me, it doesn't. If you let me know and there's space on the bus, if we could extend the invitation to legislators on both sides of the aisle, even on a first come first serve basis, maybe no one will be able to do it. I mean, it's a weekday day, but
I'll get a hold of Bob. I'll find exactly where the bus seats.
Thank you.
I think I've got 11 or 12 that are there confirmed.
Okay.
If 25, you don't see a whole bunch of people.
Okay, great. And then I'm also going to reconfirm prior my recollection of my discussion with Bob Freeman from the last time, which I believe is that we're not allowed to, on the bus, discuss our observations. We can ask we can ask questions while we're there, but we're not allowed to basically download each other and have that kind of conversation. We talk about something else entirely.
As a group, but can... Two.
I think it starts to become questionable because we're basically in a public meeting because we're all together. So the same way. So I think to be safe, I mean, he basically, what he told me last time was to be safe, you really want to restrain everyone from saying talk about football or something else. So I don't really talk about football, but there's, I'm sure, other things we can talk about.
All five board members.
Yeah.
So all five board members are together.
And it seemed fine last time. I mean, I didn't think there was an undue push to to talk. It seemed okay. But it's something we need to be mindful of because of opening law. But it certainly was allowed. We were allowed to do it. According to Bob, who's the expert.
Are we going to invite anyone from the press to come along?
Only because we didn't tell them. They hate to show up on their property and facilities.
It's
not a county thing we're going to, it's somebody else's.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that was the same issue last time. So, but you'll let me know about the seats, and if we can extend the invitation to additional legislators, that would be great. Again, I don't know how many... at a late notice in a weekday, but I don't think it would hurt if someone was interested. It would be helpful. Okay, and there's next.
The other thing, there's two things I want to talk about on the trip. The other thing was the letter for the town to have. That went out on the 29th of May. And Leon Smith and I are going to be at the supervisor's meeting next week at the Olympic Diner at 8:30 in the morning. To listen to the comments and supervisors. I haven't gotten very much phone calls on it. A couple of questions on it. So.
Marie Post, right?
Marie hasn't called me.
Oh, well.
She hasn't called me directly, I should say.
That's right.
I haven't heard she's been calling.
Just to clarify my own mind, then, municipalities do have a choice. They can choose to contract with you for your arrangement of picking up the roll-off containers, or they can contract with a private company, whatever is the cheapest for them to do.
The ball is entirely in their court. They can do that. They can merge with another time, you know, like what Stock is going to do now. They can do that. They can close the transportation down. I know there's a couple that use very little, whether or not to close, I don't know. They could reduce hours. It's really up to them. The only thing we did on our end was we looked at it, and that portion of the business was losing a lot of money. We couldn't keep up with the costs and the amount that we were charging the towns. And I had this discussion, this is interesting, with someone from the private sector. I sat down with them, and actually they brought it up to me. I didn't bring it up. And they said, hey, you're still serving all those towns. I know you're losing a lot of money because I've run the numbers. And I know what you're losing. And I didn't say it worked. And that was actually before the letter went out. It was a week before the letter went out. And they said, I'd say exactly how we would figure it in the private sector, and this is how we would do it. And I said, well, that's along the same lines of what I'm thinking, too. That's probably how we probably should maybe look at this in some way. It's not too much, but the bottom line is this was already in the works before that discussion came about. But if the bottom line is this, if you're a public benefit corporation, we're supposed to be breaking even. The whole concept behind the public benefit. And we essentially have two portions of the business. We have the people that bring us the private sector, okay, and then we have the municipalities. And what's happening is we sat down and analyzed how much it's costing to service the municipalities, and we are losing a considerable amount of money. The fee structure is too low. So what happens then, if you're trying to balance the books, is you have to use money from the private sector to supplement that, which I don't think any, I know the board is not on board with that, and most people I speak to are not on board with that. Both of them have to work independent of each other and be self-supporting. So we sat down and I sat down with our controller and said, let's run through these numbers and let's figure out what would we have to charge in order just to break even on the municipal side. That way no one can say anything. Private sector can't complain, you know, and you know, no one from the outside can really complain if we're doing it that way, we're doing it fairly. At the same time, we also promulgated this too, which I think I mentioned in the last meeting, was the fact that we had had an insurance inspector come to the facility.
About the
trucks that are lost. And the inspector came from the insurance company back in March, I think it was. March, maybe it was the beginning of April. And he took a look at the entire agency, our safety programs, our equipment and everything. He sat down when he was all done and he said to me, he said, Mr. Rose, you run an excellent operation. Your safety programs are top notch. You have an excellent safety record. No one's gotten hurt here. But I have one thing to say to you. And I said, what's that? The roll-offs are horrible. They're absolutely atrocious. So we had to hire an independent consulting firm to come in and evaluate all of our roll-off boxes. And after that report was written, it was sent to the insurance company, and they're actually reviewing it now. So what does that mean? I'll tell you exactly. The roll-off trucks and the roll-off boxes really are in dire need of replacement. They were bought many years ago to serve the towns. The towns agreed to go to a 20-year contract to help the agency pay for all that. The agency upheld their end of the bargain. The towns upheld theirs. We've extended a couple of years, over the past couple of years, and now we're at this point, we're at this crossroads where the agency's going to have to invest a lot of money in capital to do another 10 years or so. Or, if the towns aren't interested in staying with the RRA, that's fine. Then what would happen would be we would just get rid of all the old boxes and the old trucks and probably bring up a few workers. And it will, in fact, MRF, which we already thought about, because the only dual stream we get in is from the towns. So if that were to happen, I would probably just shut the conveyors down and just use the MRF for bailing cardboard, because we do get a lot of commercial cardboard in, and I make money on that. So I'd use that just for bailing cardboard and maybe sending out any loose paper, because we do get loose paper. But the rest of it, if it came in as single stream, we would just send it out as single stream like we do now.
Question. Have you looked at the feasibility of refurbishing the roll-offs?
I have a full-time welder, that's all he does. Full-time. That's his full-time job, is he repairs boxes all day long. He's been doing it since I became director.
So you're saying the robots are beyond refurbishing?
There's some that are so, such bad shape that he has nothing to weld to.
Yeah.
There's no metal left.
He's 20 years old.
Yeah. They're in rough shape. When the inspector came to me, and what caught his eye, just so you know, is he was inspecting the facility, and he was driving out of the facility to go down the U-Poles, and he was in the back of one of our roll-off trucks, and the side of the box was doing this, and I don't want anybody getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I have a great safety record, and I plan on maintaining that no matter what it takes. And so he saw the box was going there, so he said, pull that driver over to my guy. Pulled the guy over, came right back, and said, I want you to look at something, Mr. Rose. And he goes, you have an excellent program here. This is not good.
You don't want to be cleaning it up on the road.
I don't want to fall. Exactly. So we have this company come in. We evaluated all these. We wrote up a report. We pulled a whole bunch of them out of service. I don't have any 40 yards anymore to use. Any 40 yard containers. Now, part of that $1.2 million over the next 10 years of that replacement, just, you know, up front, we're trying to save as much money as we can. And up front, what we're doing is we're buying a lot of recycling boxes in our plant. Because the recycling boxes, the 30-yard or so, they're closed top. You can't put MSW in them. But you can put paper in them. You can put combing on. Those are 50% reimbursable by DEC. So that's in our calculation, just so you know. And so they would have to be dedicated. We can't cut the tops off and turn it into MSW boxes. They won't pay for that. But they will pay for the recycling. So we plan right up front trying to order a lot of those boxes up front to get that 50% reimbursement. Now, we're going to have to wait. The waiting list right now is 2 to 5 years to get that money back. But it is what it is. We'll be able to get it back. The way we came up with the structure was there's three different levels of the fees that we looked at. One was the tipping fee. And that tipping fee, that $103 a ton that the private sector pays for the debt service, believe it or not, it was about $20 out of that. It's about 20%. It's huge. There's the debt service, the T&D, with all the trucking and disposal getting in out to Syracuse. That's another roughly 60% right there. And the rest of it is employee costs and replacement and things like that. So right now, the towns are paying $93 a ton. If we collect it, if they bring it to us, it's $86 a ton. So if we bring up to $103 like the rest of them, I'm using $103 because that's a current one. But mind you, this all doesn't start until January 1. We're still in a contract with the towns until December 31st. No fees are going to change at all until January 1 if they sign on. I'd use 103 for that. And I didn't put in my letter. That's just currently. I don't know what next year's budget is going to be. I don't think it's going to be 105 or 104. We're working on the budget. We're going to start with that.
How much is the fuel surcharge at the pump with that?
Right now, it's about $7. It's about $7.
It's 110.
Yeah.
But also, yeah. If everybody comes up to 103, I mean, that's also an estimate, because if everybody comes up to 103, there's also the chance it would be less than 103.
Actually, I think we've dropped probably about a dollar.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's 103, but if all things remain the same, going into next year's budget, it's very possible to go from, because we're subsidizing the town.
Right.
But if we bring the towns up, it may actually bring the tipping fee down for everybody, you know.
Tim, if I'm, say the city of Kingston and Asopus or at Hurley, close towns that are close to the trade, so you guys right now, if they privatize, then you have to now take them out of the town structure. Now this $1.2 million is going to be paid back by less people. But the town fees now, could they actually go higher than the 103?
They could skew it. We won't have to buy as much capital. It may not be 1.2.
Okay.
It may be 1.
Right.
But what could really happen in this situation, and I've already told the board this, if everybody decides, if I were a town supervisor, the first thing I'd do is I'd go out to bid. That would compare to our rates and do due diligence, you know, and see what the best deal is. I assume that's what a lot of them are going to do. What you may find is that when we did our analysis, all right, and looked at all the cost structures, and that was that 103, that tipping fee. The other one was our cost for our trucks and our personnel cost, getting it to and from the agency, and the $85 a month per box that's in the letter, that's covering just the purchase of the capital. So three of those three segments. What you can very well find, probably, which, if I had to guess what's going to happen, is that the just like what you said, Rich, is the transfer stations, the town transfer stations that are close to our transfer station, the private sector may actually come in, they may come in a little cheaper, because of the close proximity. They won't have to make a long run. Whether one's further away, Denny and Hardenberg, they're going to be way above. Because when we did our analysis, we didn't look at each one independent.
Right.
But what we did is we looked at each one independently.
The Kingston is subsidizing for other parts of the county in your analysis because their toll costs should be lower than the Worsing or Plattekill or Gardner.
In terms of the toll cost, but in terms of the tipping fee, that's a separate issue.
Well, doesn't the tipping fee should have to include gas charges?
Well, no, that gas charges are in the pool cost.
That's in the pool charge.
And then the tipping fee is an isolated fee. That
$65 will get you a pool charge.
$62
will get you down to Marlboro or Plattekill to pay for a driver's salary, the gas for the truck back and forth.
You know why? Because I have kind of altered up the road that's only half a mile.
No, that's what I mean. They're subsidizing. That's what I'm saying.
That's not the tipping. They are in the full charge. That's the full charge. That's not the tipping fee.
There's a full charge and then there's a proximal fee. There's three charges here. And that full charge is exactly what you're saying. And that, what that $62 is, that's spread around the whole county. If you're a private sector person and you're bidding on a thing, you're looking at that. You're looking at where's the town transfer station, where's the Monterey transfer station. I can just say, I'm going to be able to keep the recycling, so that's not going to go to the RA. And the MSW's got to go there. So these are the things that they're thinking about. So if Denny or Hardenberg goes out to bid, it's going to be a huge number. Because you know, one of the thoughts that came across our mind, and when I say it was a nanosecond. Was what if we were going to come up with a separate fee for each town? We said, well, we can't do that. We've always treated the towns equally. So, and since we treated them all equally, we decided to put them all in the same pot. And this is if we come up with $62 a pole. Because right now we've got two extremes. Right now we've figured out that at the best right now we're making $28 every time we pull a box Ulster, but we're losing $258 every time we pull a box at Hardenberg.
But here's the question. I mean, taking that into consideration, looking just at the pull fee factor, if the situation that Rich raises happens and certain towns say, okay, we've got a better deal from the private sector, you're going to have to refactor the figures, obviously.
Right.
And that's the most volatile of your three numbers, the pull charge. So the pull charge could then go from $62 to, say, on average, once you take out the close ones, it could bump up to 80-100. And my question, well, that seems to be self-evident, but my question is, at what point is it drop-dead for figuring it? Because I'd be concerned for the town supervisors who here's the first, you know, offer. Meanwhile, you know, as people start to trickle in and say, well, we're not going to go, now you've got all these moving pieces, and you're refiguring the money, and then you go back to, say, town of Hardenberg and say, sorry, it's not going to be 62, it's going to be 92 for the full charge. And they said, well, you know, we just have to bid.
That may happen. Or the other thing may happen, too, is half the towns that are closest to our transfer station may drop out. The other half that are furthest away may want to be in.
But it's not going to work at 62 anymore.
It's not, and you may not even come up with a second proposal. It's very possible that it might go to the board, and the board say, you know what, if only that of these handful of towns left, do we even want to stay in the roll-off business? Because I'm going to be honest with you, we're the only solid waste authority in the state and county department, for that matter, that I'm aware of that even does this. Everyone else that I'm aware of, they don't even handle it. They leave it totally up between the town and the private sector. Stuff like that.
And I totally understand and respect that from a business and a practical perspective. What concerns me is you have all these town supervisors and mayors that are going to be trying to make their budget, and this is kind of a radical change that could be continually changing. I'm concerned about the trickle down of if they find out because it's already June, if they find out in October that the board has decided, you know what, there's only so many towns, but they happen to be all the southern towns who are still want to be in, so we're out. And in August, September, you say to those towns, we're done, now they have to go out to bid, and I'm just concerned about towns reacting in a radical way and saying, I think it was actually Ken Ronk who brought it up at a meeting, saying, if all of a sudden these towns just start closing their doors or, you know, whatever their options are, then we're going to start to see waste in the street. Like, I am very concerned about a sustainable system where we continue to where we continue to manage our own waste and recycle maximally And I know that happens on lots of individual levels, but I'm just trying to see how this goes as logical. And I'm speaking to Charlie in a lot of ways more than you. I understand Charlie's board and the board's going to make this decision. But, yes.
Tracy, Shirley, excuse me. Just next Tuesday, we have our first meeting with the town supervisors. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of feedback we initially get from them.
Yeah.
That's where we are right now. But like Tim said, the ball's in their court. Yeah.
Is the board, the ball's, sorry, Richard, if you're
no,
is the ball's in their court minus the tipping fee? Because the tipping fee, the ball is absolutely in the agency's court. The tipping fee, the agency gets to set, the board gets to say what it is, and the way it has to go is in the agency, right? So I think it's important also that, I'm assuming that they understand that, but maybe they don't. So
the
that's
very clear.
So, on a lot of,
the letter laid it out very clearly.
Yeah.
And the choices were clear.
Okay. You know, what, sorry, and then
no, you, oh, sorry. You, oh. There's one thought that was not in the letter. It was an afterthought in line after the letter went out. That's a possibility for the towns, and I'm going to bring it up to them next Tuesday. What if several towns, four towns got together, or five towns got together, were close to each other, and put out a bid based on those five towns? They got together and they did an agreement between five towns. Because I'm going to get more purchasing power that way. So, you know, if County Waste Manager or Royal is going to bid on this, I can take, you know, and I'm going to, as you say, Marlboro, Platico, Lloyd, you know, the close ones, you know, Shonda, maybe those four that are close, or Gardner, put those in as well. Maybe those supervisors can get together and do that. That's a thought. It's something I hadn't thought about. I wish I thought that before the letter went out, because that's something I could have put in there. It's just a thought. But I'm going to bring it up on Tuesday. So you may want to talk to your neighbors about this. Have a more buying power that way.
No, I just want to say two quick things. One is, you know, we don't, with the Sheriff's Department, we don't say, well, Sorbetti's had more arrests than Accor, so they're going to pay more for the Sheriff's Department. We don't, you know, a lot of costs are shared, and I think that's what our responsibility is as county government. My second thought would be, since the county does owe $650,000 or $450,000, whatever the net service fee is, let's commit $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 from the county to keep the cost lower for the towns. Who cares? You know, what's wrong with the county's got to pay it? I don't think it's, I mean, I understand what Tracy's saying. If the towns go out to bid and at this cost, then five close towns accept the private, now their costs are going to go up. It's probably not going to raise it above where the private sector was, but it just could mess it up. Well, how much debt do we have, Tim?
Just
18 million?
No, roughly 20.
We still get that much?
19, maybe around that too. 19 and change.
I just say, just close the place down and pay $3 million a year for the next 15 years. No, I'm just saying. I'm done. But the, you know, that's not the way the private sector do it.
He talks about that. That was
we're done. $3 million a year?
The Colombo family in New York City would be glad to hear that.
Well, flow control is not necessarily public service.
I know. We did discuss the possibility, and we would
it's too much debt. $18 million is too much. But I don't see a reason for saying the county can commit $100,000. I mean, they owe the agency $600,000+. Going to commit $50,000 or $100,000, and that's it. Your prices are going to stay. You know, the far off places aren't going to get surprised.
What did you put it on this? It's a 600-something thousand net service fee that we owe?
Yeah, the county hasn't paid it.
Well, that's, I mean, it is a little bit.
It's in the law.
Is it from past or is it current? Or
I think what Rich is referring to is we did the calculation last year, and it came out that it was roughly 650,000. And then we sent the letter to the county saying the calculation of the contract says 650,000. However, we're not asking for the money.
But it's in the contract that the county owes the money to the RA.
But the RA...
If the RA demands it, they'd have to pay it. Because it's in the contract.
Gotcha.
But, you know, that letter's been going on for years, long before I was there.
What they paid the net service fee.
But always that for years, the number in the letter was higher than what we were paying. I mean, pretty consistent.
But we wrote a check.
Right, but we wrote a different check than that calculation.
I understand, but we still had a financial obligation.
Right, but I mean, the calculation might have said $3 million and we paid $2 million. You know what I mean? Or whatever. I mean, I don't know.
Uh, And speaking of which, too, we're also going after the final disposal. Ken worked on that, Ken Gilligan worked on that. He just sent me his draft today, so I'm going to try reviewing that tomorrow. I want to get that out in the next week, at the latest 2 weeks, because I want that a full month. And then at the end of July, go out for the trucking to the end of August, because I know the chairman wants to finalize everything in the September meeting, so the timing is perfect. So that bid should go out next week. 2 weeks, so.
When would the new contract start?
Yeah, January 1st, and it's a 5-year. By the way, we're speaking about the debt, too, just so you're aware that the debt is paid off in 10 years, and the county contract is up in 10 years. They both expire at the same time. And I retired 10 years. 11 years. So.
That seems very small, 10 years, wow.
I mean, it's amazing. I should have paid off if they didn't refinance a few years ago.
But it's amazing that it tends to be, when you think about 20% of the tipping fee going toward debt. I mean, I believe a bad decision to refinance, but nonetheless, that's a substantial difference.
It paid off in, I guess, 11 years. It paid off in 2025.
Okay.
And the contract with the county is up in 2025. Well, hopefully I retired to pay it 30 years into 2025.
Okay, Nana Joe?
When the agency it was created to solve a countywide problem. And it did it in the best way it could. I think that, you know, I've always thought that the recommendation to export our waste was out of political cowardice, and if that goes in a minute, so be it. I still think that the agency needs to be sort of, I don't want to use the word safety net, it has a lot of connotations, but it needs to be the system that works for the town. The private sector has a lot of customers and they have a lot of choice. They have less choice than flow control. And one of the benefits of flow control is a way to address the debt. But one of my concerns with the towns is if the agency has, it is a public agency and therefore it commands some respect, and if it says the recyclables have to be in this condition, and there's some follow-up, you have an educator, you have compliance officers, private sector does not. And of course they're going to get hit at the other end when they have to bring in dirty materials. But in order to maximize a system that works, it seems to me that I'm concerned about this sort of voluntary approach, which means that if the private sector can underbid the agency for recyclables, they'll get the good deal and the agency will then, you know, end up having to charge pretty high rates to the more distant towns. I really agree with Rich that it should be equalized in some way. It may be too late to do anything about that, but it's also a question of quality control, and that's a real serious concern I have. I will try to get to the Supervisors Association and encourage the towns to participate in the agency system. I know it means a big investment in replacement boxes, but in my opinion, the reason we are where we are financially is that we didn't have the courage to sign a landfill 20 years ago and have a revenue stream. And it just got worse and worse. In those days, they didn't envision the price of fossil fuel going up as much as it has. And it's really put us in a bad situation. But I just don't think that it makes sense for individual towns to do their own thing. I think a county system that works and keeps the cost, I think it's absolutely fair to charge the real cost and not to subsidize the town. but it should be an equalized cost. And I'm afraid that the system is going to put a lot of pressure on towns that just happen to be at a distance from the processing facility. And ideally, I think we should be processing and bringing those revenues into helping for the system. And the worst thing is shipping air out of the county, paying dearly to ship unprocessed recyclables loose to someplace else to process them and collect the revenue. That's to me, that's not what the system was set up to do. And I am surprised to hear that the roll-off business that the agency is in is not that service is not provided in other counties. I would have thought that other counties were in a similar situation.
I'm not aware of any. Maybe that might be something that the rest of them understand. I don't know. But I know a lot of my counterparts around the state know that I can think of.
You know, NIDA Herkimer? I mean, just since it's where we went, it's a private hauler that does all of the towns.
Yeah.
And they've been in level one private hauler rather than.
I think each town is responsible for their own transfer station. Like, Dutchess does that. You know, Dutchess, each town is. My bank contracts out with Royal, or my contract out with Red Hook, or somebody else.
I'm not sure. I mean, and I'm going to have to look back at my notes, but I recall a lot of discussion about, and I'm using quotes, but they say, we have our drivers talk to, and we have GPS where our drivers, the head of the agency said, I'm able to talk to our drivers. Do you remember this, Charlie? I'm able to talk to our driver, and if there's a funeral, I can move
them. That was? That's what he's going for. That remember that big transfer station we started at?
Mm-hmm.
His drivers transport waste from that transfer station up to the landfill. And we thought about the funeral.
Okay.
He said his drivers have to go around the funeral and stuff like that, and they call ahead and that sort of thing. That's going for the end.
That's just from that place to the next place.
Right.
Okay.
That's what that was in relation to. That was a pretty big transfer station. So,
yeah.
So people up in the other county in Herkimer where the landfill was. You go directly to the landfill, or if they're down in Oneida, down by Utica, they just go to the transfer station, dump it off there, but they have their drivers taking it up there.
Okay.
Yeah. But I can call and find out about the towns, though. But I don't recall them talking about that. But in our proposal, as it stands right now, all the towns are treated equally. And all those numbers are something everybody signs on. If everybody signs on, that's when we figured out we needed to break even. On a 10-year contract. We first looked at 5 years, the last part of that work. We went with a 10-year.
Oh, that's your proposal list for the town 10?
It was a 10-year, yeah.
What if they want to do 5 years?
We can do that. We have to go back and run all the numbers again.
Right.
And we looked at a 5 and we thought that was going to be too much. To try to cram all that capital into 5 years, it just didn't work. And with 10 years, and 10 years looked good for us too, because in 10 years the bonds are paid off. Contract,
yeah, no.
I retire.
I just think it could be a long time. Yeah.
Sure, I guess it's going to make it work. Now, I can tell you, the way the finance director does it is, and I knew this before I even talked to this guy 2 weeks ago, but I was told back when Stormy went out to bid. You remember that 2 years ago when Stormy did that? One bid came in double where our fees were, and it was going to triple, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And I found out then, I didn't know how they were charging it. And what I found out is they charged this full charge, they charged the tipping fee, and they charged, at least the time they did, they charged this box rental fee. That's why I came up with this box rental, because I remember back then that's what they did. So when I ran into this guy about 3 weeks ago, I said, you guys charge the box rental, how do you guys figure that out? And he said, well, we charge the customer for the box, so the box costs $5,000, and it's a 3-year contract, you break it up. You know, a box will, they'll pay for over the course of 3-year contracts or a 5-year contract.
Like a cell phone.
Like a cell phone. And so I said, well, that might be a good way for us to look at doing it the same way. Just try to spread, you know, fortunately I can spread them out among, you know, 20 municipalities or something, but if they all sign on it.
But can't you just raise that and lower the years?
We could.
we could, and that's what we were.
I just think 10 is a little long. I mean, if I were a supervisor or a town board member, I'd be hesitant to bind the future town board because you don't know what technology they're going to be out there. You don't know which. I understand how you why you had to do it. I'm just saying, if I had to make a decision even on the legislature for 10 years out, I would be.
I think the move of the board is to be as flexible as possible to accommodate the tariffs. So we won't know until we meet.
Right. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
How many of the board, Kim, you'll be there on Tuesday's meeting, and Charlie, I'm assuming you're going to be there on Tuesday's meeting?
And
the whole board?
Yes.
And Leon will be there.
Yes. And Leon will be
there. Leon and I, for sure. I don't know about the other board.
Okay.
And this is the supervisor's
session?
Yes.
At
8:30
at the
Dungeon.
Yeah.
The Dungeon
is on Washington.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go on.
That's what I mean.
You're not as invested as I am. No, it's
close to everything. I don't need to get ready. You know, and again, I put in the letter, please feel free to call me and attend. I have only heard from a couple of supervisors. One of them just said that I needed to talk to my board about it. The other one has a couple financial questions
that we can handle. I have one other quick question, and that is, when we're talking about, let's say, a third of them or half of them decide to go privatize them, and the harder ones are left, it would be less roll-off boxes to purchase and maintain and everything. But you said it would only go down, by, you know, from 1.2 million to, say, a million. Seems like I'm not understanding what all is in the 1.2 million.
That's roll-off boxes, roll-off trucks. Every roll-off truck is $175,000.
It's the truck. Fewer boxes doesn't really mean much. Doesn't help much with the trucks.
Yeah, the trucks they have an excess of 500,000 miles on. I get phone calls all the time, transmission ready guys, to get it up there, get the whole back on the road. We're band-aiding these things together. They just keep breaking down. They got a lot of miles on them, and they're worn out. You know, some are 1994s. You know, I think the newest one we have is, please don't hold me this, I think it's an 04 or an 05. Because one of ours caught fire in the yard and burned up, and the insurance company gave us the money to go to the one. I think that was an 0405 somewhere in that ballpark. Maybe 06. It was a few years before I got there. I started in 10. But
are the towns doing their own wood grinding, you know, which is...
Some are, yeah.
And does the agency provide that service?
Yeah, the grinder. Not for free. It's $1,250 a day, and the excavator uses $350 a day, which is about... I was told by the supervisors that they go out to bid is about a third of what the private sector would charge.
And that was why the agency was decided to provide service at the lowest possible cost. I mean, the private sector has a big market in which to play and to make profit, but this was supposed to be a service for a public benefit.
Yeah.
Right.
So hopefully they'll see the value in that, and
agency
will support that.
Can we? I was talking to someone the other day. I went to my own transportation, by the way. I used time while I was talking to the guys up there about it because they read the letter. And as soon as I came in, they started asking me some questions about it. But I said, I'm not speaking personally for me, but if your costs go up, let's say about 25%, right now, with my family, I recycle every can. My 6-year-old, an 11-year-old, they go nuts. Somebody's not recycling. It's just a house that they're brought up in because of their father. You know, so we recycle everything. By the time we recycle everything, I end up with one bag with a family of four, one bag every 2 weeks. Now, I pay $3 a bag, and I pay $30 a year in a permit fee at all. Now, if they increase that bag from $3 to $4, or even $3 to $5, my costs go up $2 every 2 weeks, I told the guy, I'm not going to play with it. I think it's still really the deal. I mean, it's because I'm in the business, but that's just still, and if you got to, you have to go from $3 to $5, now I realize some people are going to get angry with that. They're going to look at that as a 30% increase in cost and so forth, but if it goes up $4 a month, I used to have lease managers coming to my house, and that was $40 a month, and I don't pay them.
15 inches off.
And you know, can I say something?
Yes.
That's, you're actually right on that, but there are other repercussions of what's going on with you know, everything that's happened in the last year with the waste. The town of Rochester's cut their transfer station from 5 days being open to 3. I have guys, good friends of mine, who are roofers and builders. They now, in the town of Rochester on a Tuesday, used to go to the transfer station. They can't go there anymore because it's closed on a Tuesday. They have to drive to Kingston and get rid of their garbage. So now they're burning another 4 gallons or 2 gallons of gas in, another 2 gallons of gas out. So there are, and I agree, you know, that we all, I recycle. I pay for $26 a month for a bucket. I put it out every 2 weeks. Sometimes every 3 weeks. And it's never full. I have my brother throw stuff in there. I said, throw some of your stuff in there because I can't fill it up. But there's certainly other repercussions of this law, and Rochester is a great example. I have friends complaining all the time.
When you say Rochester, is it because of budget? I mean,
because of cost, they're cutting,
can I ask,
and labor costs, they're cutting.
Not to be argumentative.
I went now off to Kingston to your office to get rid of their.
But when you're talking about roofers, isn't that like construction demolition? I mean, are the towns, a lot of the towns protected? Accepting
or
not really supposed to accept construction
demolition,
that's not against the law.
The towns were staffed for residential use.
What's that
look like? Our transportation. Our transportation is
company. In New Paltz?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they can go there.
Yeah.
The way the contract actually reads, anything over 2 cubic yards is not supposed to be deposited in a town transportation. That's not in the contract. 2 cubic yards, just so everybody knows. A typical bed of a pickup truck is 2 cubic yards. So, and that's supposed to be for residential, but they were designed for somebody cleaning out the basement. So commercial people are supposed to be coming to us. I don't know
if they're putting more in pickup trucks, but they're doing stuff, you know? I mean, they're doing their work. And they just, for 10 years or 15 years, went to Rochester. Now they can't go there a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, only one day a week. That's effective.
Can we, Charlie, Tim, I circulated the letter that went to the supervisors to the committee, and then it was subsequently, Vicki also circulated it to the legislature, just so everyone had it in case they got phone calls and or questions. But I know that there was a supporting document, like the graph where you ran out what Amanda was talking about with the roll-offs and the trucks that all sort of laid out. Can we get a copy of that so that I could get that?
Even
to start with the committee, just so that the committee can see. So, Amanda, when you're asking about where the 1.2, that graph is really specific. It says how many roll-offs, and then it breaks them out in each town, how many rolls each town gets, and that's why they cost this much.
And you want to
each
town, too?
That'd be great.
Yeah, I can do
that.
Thank you. Now, we based all that on current.
Yeah.
In the town of Ulster, they have five boxes or seven boxes.
Change.
We based it on what crime this is what they have, so this is what their monthly rental fee would be.
That made it really clear, so you could see very clearly that, oh, okay, if you said instead of 5, I'll go down to 3, that you could see very quickly how that would change the numbers using that graph.
And there's a lot of I'd be more than happy to send it out. It's going to take a little, probably create a lot of questions when I'm going to explain. There's a lot of ways that those numbers came about. And we have to sit down and and I don't mind doing it. I guess to kind of give a lecture on it, on where all those numbers come from.
Okay.
But it's a spreadsheet that we put together and some background information in there.
Okay.
So that's not shown on there because it's comprehensive.
Okay. Yeah, and I would just keep it. I can keep it within this committee. I mean, and if people have questions, I can have them directed to you, or if you may not be at the July meeting, but we'll see. I mean, maybe Charlie could explain it.
Just so everybody knows, I may not be at July. I definitely will be here in August.
Okay.
I may not be back in September.
Okay.
I just have a question.
Yes,
do you get it, you know, is there any profit for you in that way for the recycling? Is that kind of a journey?
We started to calculate the recycling. That was a question we had, but the commodities are skewed all over the place, that it's really hard to get a handle on that, and sometimes we put in our budget, we think we're going to make $500,000, but that's also all the recycling that comes in from the private sector, too.
it would be difficult just to try to segregate what comes out of each town.
Because I know that's one of their, that's one of their issues that, that was brought up.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know, you're paying a full charge and you're making money on it.
The problem is we're looking at 10-year projection, and in this industry, I think everybody knows, it's based entirely on the economy. Our budget is based. That's why the comptroller's office wants us to have that 15% or 20%, because they told us, you're not a municipality, you're not guaranteed these tax, you know, these property taxes. Your entire budget is based on the economy. And because of that, you've got to have a lot more reserves. So this goes back to the same thing. These commodities are fluctuating on a daily basis with the Dow, and I'm getting phone calls from brokers and stuff, and they are literally fluctuating like this. But the day we call a broker, the guy says the price is good till tomorrow. And that's what they'll do, because the things are happening in China, and that's the stock market work. So for us to project what the commodities are going to look like in 10 years from now, that's an impossible task.
So it's kind of fair to say, sometimes you take it and make nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, recently, and the board saw this, the last board meeting, our single stream that we've taken in the facility has shot through the roof. And why? Because the private sector is looking at it and going, all right, well, if I have to drive it from Kingston over to Catskill to my single stream facility and transport it up to Albany, does it make sense for the fuel? We're losing a lot of money on this. So I could dump it at the RA for free. They don't charge anything for recycling. Then mm-hmm. the RA take it. You know, it's only $10 a ton. It's only $20, or only $12 a ton. And it's hanging around that $12 mark. And they're not making any money on it. It's bottomed out. And, you know, we've always said, I know when I first came on board, our old attorney, Steve Wayne, used to always tell me, you know, we're a public benefit corporation. It goes back to what you guys were saying, you're here to serve the public. And part of that is we're the market of last resort. We have to be open. He was talking about the MRF specifically. We have to be open to the MRF because we are the market of last resort. When everything bottoms out in the private sector and the stuff is not worth anything, it's going to come to us, and it's our job to handle it. And I still remember him telling me that when I first became executive director, and he was right in saying a lot of that. So, but with the commodities, if I would have looked 5 years on the road, how much of that, all those commodities, it was just impossible.
But that might be a point you might want to, you know, bring up, that it's not necessarily a revenue for you.
It may not be.
Right. But I don't think that they're looking at it that way.
But if mom doesn't know, wait, they had, there was a newspaper article of waste management. I remember a guy standing like this, this is hundreds of bales of recycling, and they couldn't move it. Everything just shut down in the country.
So we have that issue with glass pretty consistently as well.
That's always a pain in the neck to get rid of. So
you would think that would be easier. You know what I mean?
Glass is the worst.
But you would just think that.
Hardware, believe it or not, is one of the best. Hardware is just a money maker. That's why if the towns pull out, then I have to get rid of that portion of the business. You know, I do worry because I got to figure out what I'm going to do with the MRF, but what I will keep doing is still bailing the cardboard because we get enough commercial stuff in. From, you know, big companies, but the furniture companies, local, and stuff, they have a lot of cardboard. They come in, they dump it for free, but they dump it on the tipping floor, and we bail it, and there's still money in that. And actually, you remember the engineering report that the engineer did 3 years ago, 4 years ago on the MRF and what we should do with the MRF?
Mm-hmm.
The conclusion really on that was, because there was no focus on recycling, you keep bailing the cardboard like you're doing. That's that was his conclusion at that time.
I'd just like to say that the based on all the stuff that Tim's saying was the part of the original thought in bringing up a discussion a year or two ago about flow control for recyclables. On the one hand, you know, you don't want the private sector can take materials and make some money on do things while your government interfere. But there's a strange kind of system that's going on where when they can make the money, they grab the materials and they go elsewhere and they max out. And when they can't make money, the cost burden is put on the users of the RRA, which means higher tipping fees. And so the concept was, flow control evens it out. You get the highs and you get the lows, and the whole thing comes out somewhere in the middle in a non-profit arena. So it's a very tricky kind of business. I know when I was involved in a corporation and at the work. There were years where the the whole profits of the corporation were huge, you know, when cardboard would soar up in price, and there are other years you have to pay for someone to take it, and you couldn't get anything, and you watch the whole bottom line of the company fluctuating like crazy, and this was a big company that was diversified more so than the RRA is, and so the concept of flow control for recyclables is to bring some stability, which in turn brings stability to municipalities. But it's a very tricky thing, but just to clarify some of the rationale why that discussion has come up before.
And that's actually what I was about to say as well. And again, directing to Charlie and the board, and I'll reach out to the board. I mean, I have advocated for taking a really hard look at flow control of, and I want to be specific, regulated recyclables, because the thing that got the Supervisors Association upset is that even though we were saying flow control of regulated recyclables, they were reacting to specifically scrap metal was the big thing. We're going to take our revenue from the scrap metal, which was not on the table. But I think we, and I certainly, I would hope that the board would be willing to look at, when you talk about an engineer study looking at that study from a few years ago of the MRF, I think we should also be looking at what the financial picture would be with flow control of regulated recyclables. How would that change the bottom line? How would that change the tipping fees if we were guaranteed? What kind of investment would we have to make? Because I've always heard Tim say, I don't know if I could handle it. Okay, what would we have to do to be able to handle it? What picture would we want to see if we did have flow control of regulated recyclables? Would we want a dual stream regulation? Because certainly, or would we want a single stream? I mean, it would be entirely up to the agency to determine how those materials were coming in if the legislature and the enabling legislation were to get on board. Because, as I think we all know, the enabling legislation ironically allows for flow control of C&D right now, with just a change in the law, just like our bill here, but it does not allow for flow control of recyclables without going back to change the enabling legislation. And as Attorney Cahill said, we're the only county in New York State with that preclusion. I have no idea. I wasn't here then. I don't know why it was written in. I can't even imagine why. And I asked him why he thought, and he said Mr. Cahill, and he said he had no idea. In fact, he was surprised by it when it was shown to him. So I very much would like to see it, because following on what Ken said, I'd like to see the study and I'd like to see an analysis, because I think for me, when I voted to support flow control, I voted for it saying this is just a piece of the whole picture. And I wanted to look at things like citing a regional landfill or a landfill here, and I've said that all along. People on the committee have heard me say all along, but part of it is keeping, as you talk about the volatility, but keeping control of our recyclables, creating something that's sustainable. Again, I'm so impressed with what I saw at O9 Herkimer, where it was a whole system that, to me, down to, as crazy as it sounds, but down to the snowmobile trash, was a public benefit. Like, really thought about how do we become a member of the community, meaning landfill, how do we assist the community, how do we assist the environment, and I think all those things, they're big things to tackle, and I have no illusions that this is a short-term fix. I mean, I think that when we talk about the whole picture, we're talking about a lot of years, but I, for one, think one of the places we should start, and I would urge the board, is to come back and after some analysis, and I don't know whether you hire someone or you start to run the numbers internally,
let me ask you this question. The bigger question is the mood of the county legislature that which, if the numbers came in right, they would be inclined to go with regulated recyclables on the flow?
I don't think we could say until the numbers came in, but I think certainly if the numbers came in and it said, okay, we're going to have to make this investment, but it's going to affect the tipping fee by X for everyone, for private and public sector, and we're going to have control. I mean, you don't know. I mean, and again, in terms of the supervisor's reaction, it was very clear to me. It's just we were talking about so many things at once at the time. We were having the flow control discussion, and then we had the supervisors all, not all, but certain of the supervisors so upset about even the possibility of flow control of recyclables, because they were all talking, everything I heard in terms of public comment, everything I heard was about scrap metal, which was not what we were talking about at all. It was not on the table. It was not on the table. And I mean, they were coming to testify to the legislature, they were writing letters, no matter what we said, it was, the scrap metal. And I just, at the time I had fatigue because it was something that we were talking about, but whereas flow control was something we were in the process of actually having a debate about. So became too many things to debate at once, but I think Charlie can point out the whole picture.
County legislature question was, we had a very successful businessman come before the legislature, Abel Garrigan, mm-hmm. and pointed numbers that the savings in our own landfill would be $3.5 million a year, and we could start with 10-acre increments.
Yeah, let's start there first.
Right.
I agree with you.
So then I say the move, and he didn't sell anybody. I mean,
well, I don't think he didn't sell anybody. I think that it's it is still to many people, and again, it's a new legislation, it is still somewhat intangible in terms of the landfill. And I also, some of the pushback I've heard on the landfill did not take any of what he said into account. So it's people whose minds are locked. It did not take anything he said into account. And it certainly didn't take, which is why I'd like more people to see him and I heard from her, not just to see the system working, but as those of us who went would recall, that one town that we drove through with the trucks, their whole town budget was paid for as a user fee for driving through the town. So
Post benefit.
And that's not even the whole town. That was the town that was being used as a route and was happy about it. So we're in a whole different ballgame, and I think to talk in theoretically, I mean, we have to keep the discussion open, we have to keep the investigation open, and we have to keep coming with more figures that that can convince people. Because I'm with Nana. I mean, I feel like, and with Abel, and the idea of the soul system, at the end of the day, the thing that's going to make this work, that is going to make it a true public benefit corp, and that is going to be the most benefit to the environment and the people of the county, is citing a regional or a local landfill. And I say that absolutely with the assumption that it would have the host community's blessing. I'm not talking about, I mean, part of what I think the problem was 20 years ago is, one, there was a mindset that landfills were anti-environment. It was, you know, the images of what they actually used to look like. That was problem number one. And problem number two is, it's, and I wasn't there, but it's as if someone looked at the county and said, this spot works geographically and physically, this spot works, but then they had no discussion with the community. And, I mean, you know what happened?
I'm more politics than I am.
Let me, I know this is a long discussion, but I just want to very quickly say that what I don't like is the agency getting dumped upon. That, in terms of regulated recyclables, that is, and in terms of, you know, this whole idea of the closed towns versus, I don't like the private sector skimming. And I know that the agency has to provide the service so stuff doesn't end up on the side of the road, but developing a system where, you know, with regulated recyclables, I would say if we don't renovate the MRF so that it can handle single stream, even if we regulated those recyclables, part of the regulation could be to send it to some place that can process it at your own expense. But the materials that come in from the from most of the towns are relatively source separated and relatively clean, and I'm assuming you're able to market the material from all of the towns except the city of Kingston.
The material that comes in from the towns is excellent.
Yeah.
It's very high quality.
Yeah.
And we get paid accordingly.
Yeah.
It is excellent material.
And then as far as the haulers, a lot of the haulers are not collecting separated material. They've gone to single skin. So that's the question. And it seems to me that all of this ultimately needs to be factored into the plan. And I know that's all in the hands of the DEC, but some of these questions have to be resolved, because it's hard for a town to decide to sign up for a 10-year contract not knowing what the plan is. It's, in a sense, putting the cart before the horse but the contracts are all expired, so I'm not saying you're right in doing what you're doing. You need to do that. You need to know, but it just feels like there are a lot of pieces that depend on each other, that are sort of somehow interlocking, and once there is an approved plan, but in the meantime, while that plan is still in formulation, I think some of these questions should be explored more and addressed. And from my experience, I believe the markets fluctuated as much 20 years ago as they do now, that you could, in the end, break even unregulated recyclables once they were at your facility. Some of them you lose on the glass, sometimes you lost on the mixed paper, sometimes you're paying, sometimes you were getting income. But are you bailing cans, aluminum and plastic varies very much, and or used to?
It all depends on the oil prices. Plastic, well, so the oil prices go up, plastic goes up.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a hard thing for people to understand the subtleties of, but I just don't want to see, you know, I want the private sector to do what they do and do it well, but I don't want them to, put the agency and therefore the towns and the ratepayers at risk because they're cherry picking. Anyway, probably enough.
Yes, probably enough on this. but it is. I mean, it's obviously important to this committee. And Charlie, you can. I will reach out.
I just make a note.
Thank you.
I will see what I can find.
Okay.
As far as cost impact.
And at the next meeting, I mean, I'll reach out to you and to Tim. Well, we'll see you on the 18th, but post supervisors meeting. In order to update this committee, especially if you're not here, Tim, in July.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't be here in July.
Okay. Well, and we're going to talk about the dates in a minute. We'll do that. Okay. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to move on to.
I'm going to ask you to come. I'm already stuck to Bobby Martin. They come here.
Okay, everyone, we're going to move on to Resolution 222, setting a public hearing on proposed Local Law Number 6 of 2014, a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in the County of Ulster, to be held on Tuesday the 15th, 2014 at 7:15 p.m. I'll entertain a motion for this discussion. Okay. If I can, I put this in. And I do believe we still should move forward. It's my intention, and we've already reached out to have, I've been working with Vicki and Price, the chair of this as well, to have members of the EIC make basically the presentation that they did to this committee to the full legislature at a special, it'll be called a special informational meeting on caucus day, because that's when we have the most people. So the special informational meeting will be the week before this public hearing. The one thing was someone raised a concern to me, or I heard from Vicki, and I reached out regarding the contract with the Energize New York or the EIC, and allowing for if the question was raised, if the county wanted to do it itself, which the county can do this themselves, just like we have an IDA, it's just we have to have both the will and then access to the capital to do it. And this question, as you all know, was raised in committee. We could rescind the law once our own thing was in place. And I asked the person someone from the private sector, who, if there were concerns, to get them to me in writing and have them. So it's my belief that we should move forward, since we're just talking about a public hearing. If concerns are raised either by legislators or the public at the public hearing and we need to make changes, then we'll go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I was recorded today.
Yeah.
I was just talking to my father about it. What is the particulars with it, like the villages? Are they not included in it? Are they not protected if they don't pay their taxes? Do you know how, is there anything?
They're not included or not?
Because right now, if a homeowner doesn't pay their village taxes,
right,
the county doesn't foreclose on the property. They don't make the villages whole. They don't foreclose on the property. If the village doesn't have the resources to proceed with foreclosures, the foreclosure, in the village zones, they hold over $1 million, and they don't have the resources to foreclose on all the properties that people own back. Village taxes, not county or town.
Right.
So how does this, my father said, I didn't quite understand it, that this has affected the villages aren't covered by this, or they won't have the same protections. And
trying to recall this.
Yeah. And my thing is, with this law, I think other than the city of Kingston, it's probably going to benefit the villages more than anybody else, because the villages have the oldest system. And, you know, the residential 3 units and 4 units that are built in the early 1900s.
Right, right.
Were more than the rural areas.
I'm trying to remember if that
is. And I don't know if there is an issue, but my father, he said there was some issue. He thought. But I don't know,
right.
I didn't either understand them or we got interrupted, but I said, I got to ask Tracy about it.
Yeah.
And I just got working today. And
go ahead. During the presentation, the last time they were here, it was raised that the villages do not have the ability to place a lien in or take the foreclosure. The village does not have that authority, only the city of Kingston and Ulster County.
So I think the villages wouldn't be, if that were, I think the villages wouldn't get the benefit unless they signed it. They'd have to sign up separately.
The only municipality in Ulster County, other than the county, that could sign up for this independently is the city of Kingston.
Oh, right. That's it. Okay.
So the county is the only one who legally can enter into a lien situation, other than the city of Kingston. So at this point, this county could do this just for the county, they could not do it for the city of Kingston. So all villages are included.
The
village is
included with the city.
The city
is not, unless the city chooses to sign
that. So if the county has a lien on a village property,
the county has a total lien on a village.
Or in this program.
Understand that for this program, it's only for businesses.
No, or multi-family units.
Right.
The village has to demonstrate prior to being accepted into the program that they have the capabilities, that they're sustainable beforehand. It's not going to be for a
pretty aggressive, if you recall.
That's fine. I thought there was some issue what if they stop paying their village taxes? It won't affect this program?
Because this program is paid through their mortgage, right?
It's paid through their taxes.
Taxes.
So
we'll go to the county.
Because the county is the lien holder, not the village.
Yeah.
I don't pay the county taxes. That's true.
Or school.
Well, it's a separate line on the tax. So you know what I mean? You have your. It'd be like if you're in a sewer district, you know, the line on the tax would be broken out of.
That's fine.
You know what I would say, Rich? I can get further clarification for sure, and I have full confidence that if these questions pose a problem, then we'll revisit and we'll postpone. You know what I mean? Like, we'll
make a solution. Absolutely. I'm all for it. I'm going to support this.
but how come when a resolution was brought last month about an accountability and a fees, and when executive comes out with a plan, everybody's saying, well, let's not move forward until we have more of a question and answer?
Because this is setting a, setting a public hearing?
That's what I was doing, too. We're setting a public hearing.
For the executive? I'm sorry.
Remember when the executive comes out with a plan to privatize, to do different things? We wanted to see.
Oh, right.
We wanted to check the justification sheet.
Yeah.
And everybody said, well, there's we have questions to ask. We don't know 100% what it's going to be. So let's put it off. So my thing is, why should this be any different?
We can put it off if you want. I mean, we've had multiple hearings. We went to, we had multiple
questions. I'd like to address that as someone who supports the cost benefit analysis.
Right.
I believe the reason that was put off is because there were some specific things that people wanted change and were in the process of working on.
Okay.
On this one here, I don't think we know enough to know what changes we want.
And that's fine, but when you put something forward that you're planning on passing without any that's formed?
Well, that's one way to get to the questions that we need to answer.
Well, so there is one other distinction. I mean, in the...
It's because of the same with the other one, too.
Well, there is another distinction, if I might. In the other example, the other example, it was the first time everyone was seeing it, was at that day, at that meeting. This, we've had this in this committee for 2 months, and I had a meeting with both leadership and the chair where the presentation was made and questions were taken again. So that's the first difference. The second is that at that meeting, there were differences of opinion, even from the sponsor to the attorney to, you know, it was a little bit, which is why that meeting went on, a little bit chaotic, what actually was intended from the resolution and what the resolution might have actually affected. And then the third difference, but again, if it's the committee's wish to hold it off, I'll hold it off. The third difference is that this is the same local law that is actually functioning in a sister county, which is Orange County. So it's already been vetted by a neighboring county. This is exactly as it was written for them, and we had the opportunity to ask questions. I'm okay if this is the way you want to hold off. I'm okay holding off.
As long as the village is already excluded from participating. They have to jump through more hoops.
My understanding was, as Krista said, that the city would be the one that would have to separately adopt because it has a separate taxing authority.
Does the village have a separate taxing authority too?
I don't know.
The village is not able, according to the presentation, the village is not able to place a lien and or take foreclosure because they don't have that authority.
No, the village can. They don't have the financial resources to do it.
Well, maybe under this program.
Well, under this program. I think that generally speaking, if somebody doesn't pay their village taxes.
Because that's why people don't pay their village taxes and the house still doesn't get foreclosed on.
Because they can't afford it. They don't have the resources, a certain amount of money to do them.
That would be the same for DuPont. I mean, DuPont, Sarkis, and Ellenville.
Right. The other issue, so they pay their county and the school, but not the village. I would say not about the financial. So the house doesn't go for foreclosure because the village is not authorized to take them as a foreclosure. Is that what it is? I thought it was they didn't have the financial resources. That's what it sounds like. Well, New Falls doesn't have any foreclosures at all, right? And Sarkis has
probably not nearly as many. The main issue is in the village of Ellenville. They've got over $1 million in outstanding village taxes, and they cannot take the properties. That's why they want the county to take it over, but Mike's office doesn't want to take it over, even though village people still pay town taxes, just like we all pay town taxes. Mm-hmm. Mike, I know you were at the meeting when Ken Cornell flat out said, well, we have to hire 300 people. And was another example. Well, show us how you have to hire.
We actually just got an update on that. I don't know if it went to everyone. It's just Ways and Means. Did it go to everyone?
Ways and Means.
Yeah, we got an update on that, which I have a lot of questions about Ways and Means. It was a similar, like, I'm going to have to hire two. We're going to have to hire three people.
And it's the largest law firm in Ulster County right now, as is. They got more lawyers working here than they do in any law firm.
I think those are real.
I would just hope if the villages are prohibited from participating in this,
I will not be comfortable passing the law because I think it needs to be fair for everybody. City of Kingston, they can't do it because of whatever reason, then so be it. That's up to them. But
they can,
because the city, the villages want to be able to participate, but if they can't, then I think we should step back from it.
I'd be glad to follow up and just send that information.
Do you mind?
I may be wrong. No, I want to understand it as well. And Tracy, we had talked earlier, and there was some concern about whether or not, you know, that ultimately the county might want to do this themselves, and are we locking in?
Well, and, you said it, she said.
And Section 3 of the municipal agreement says the municipality, the county, may modify the program by limiting the types of properties which may receive financing for energy improvements and the amount and availability, and shall provide written notice to EIC of such proposed modification. The modifications shall become effective upon written approval of EIC, which shall not be unreasonably withheld, and such approval shall have no effect on the duties and obligations of each party in connection with the agreement. But basically, the ability to change or stop is in this Section 3. So if at some point, there is a whole lot of work that goes into making this work, but if the county wanted to take that on in the future, it could.
Would
that
make you
happy? Or if the county wanted to make it
out. One more question, maybe, if you could, and probably a dumb question, but if the county took the program over itself and we terminated this resolution, would the people that had outstanding loans, would they be obligated to pay more? Or can they continue to pay them off over the term?
No, I would, from what I recall, once the terms are set, they're locked.
Okay.
And you can't pay them early.
Right, I remember that.
And it stays with the property, not the person, not the property owner. So,
but if the county terminates the program,
I think it's still locked. It's just from there forward that the county
would do something,
but whatever was in place, it's locked in.
People did it and we changed it. People got billed for $10,000 or $20,000 or $40,000.
No, it's worth, They also said they have,
I should ask you.
60 active proposals, and the reason, these are very large proposals, so it takes a while to get the energy audits and whatever, but there are 60 that are ready to go that have met all the criteria. No, in the Northern Westchester and in Orange. So, you know, businesses are responding. And unfortunately, I don't know if people know, but we lost, Central Hudson and the Public Service Commission lost their appeal in front of the Second Circuit Court. I don't know if there is yet another appeal. I'd be surprised if they really stood behind us, Central Hudson and the Public Service Commission, as far as they could go. One of the things, you know, that may come out of that is, with the higher rates, more people may be interested in something like this. So having this available, I think, would be a good thing. I still want to find a way that capacity charges go to renewables, not fossil fuel and subsidizing nuclear power. Anyway, so the villages, and then
what happens if the county terminates?
If the county terminates,
cool.
So I do think that this is very exciting on that position. It'll be good to have the presentation for the legislature, and good to take questions or concerns or positive comments from the public. To me, it makes logical sense that it would come post presentation to the legislature, because then also if the public wanted to hear the full presentation, they would have the benefit of that as well.
So where does it go from here if we're all we're calling for is Does that go to other committees or does it?
No.
Yeah, it goes to the committee.
Yeah, wait, so yeah,
and laws and rules.
Okay. In terms of setting the public hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, any of them would probably.
Yeah.
To me, it shouldn't have to go to Ways and Means. There's no financial impact of this to the county.
No, but I guess because of the potential financial impact.
Everything we do has a potential financial impact, and they don't all go to
Ways and
Means.
I know.
I mean, somebody prints this piece of paper, that's a financial impact.
Okay.
I think they set their hands in so much stuff.
I think Ways and Means is set up to review everything.
You know, well, it should have been.
I do think it's, you know, it's funny because, it's something you should talk about along the road, because I brought it up, that I think it's crazy that things get sent to Ways and Means strictly on the advertising cost. Like, it goes away to me because there's a $300 cost associated with advertising it.
That's right, it's nonsense.
It's just
a way that those that group can control things.
So, and now that things have to be approved by all the committees it goes through, that's a concern. But again, we're just setting a public hearing now, and it'll be post informational session. So, the legislators have a problem, there's a lot we can deal with, and we'll have to make some. So, okay. Any more discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Moving on. Climate Smart Committee, we're still looking for the business member, and I want to run it by the committee. I'm talking to Nana, and I want to see if I could maybe have Krista draft a letter on behalf of myself and the committee to reach out to other legislators, particularly in the southern part of the county, to ask their business groups, based on geographic diversity. Although we should look at all geographic diversity.
Or northern.
Yeah, right. Go to the chamber.
The letter to the chamber.
Just say if you can make any recommendations.
Yes, just talk to your membership.
Exactly.
Chambers. I don't want to make a lot of work, but you know, Rotary or like the business association found that value.
Yes, I mean. Yeah. So is that okay with the committee if we just draft a letter and get that out? Again, just soliciting basically a volunteer for that committee, but I think it's an important volunteer.
And I'd be fine if it was emailed and we didn't put paper.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the Catskill Watershed Corporation, we used to get monthly booklets of this, but we just like iPads. So everything's now sent on email, downloaded, and no more paper.
That's great. Okay, we just did the EIC update since it was part of it. And then moving on, the oil shipment safety public forum, Krista made a lot of calls. We reached out. We had been talking about June 18th, and Kate Hudson and I have been playing for that. I also spoke with the sheriff, and he apologized because he told me that there was a CSX had a safety forum, and he told me that they were having a safety forum. They were going to let me know when it was, and then I called him to find out when it was, and he said Wednesday, it was Friday, so I missed it. That said, it's been at this point a lot to coordinate, so I'm going to continue to work with Krista, talk to Kate, and keep the committee apprised about when we're thinking about doing here, if we can get together, it's a lot of moving pieces, so it's a lot of people. And the more I talk to people, like for example, I talked to the sheriff, and he said you got to get Kingston Ulster Fire Department on that list. I mean, there's people that weren't on the list that then it just expands and expands. So
sounds like you're on the right track.
No pun intended. So that's where we're at with that. And again, we're saying public forum, but probably what we're really talking about is more of a scoping session where the panelists would be discussing with one another and taking questions versus a forum for members of the public one after another to come up. It's more about actually having this discussion amongst the people who are directly involved with the issue. So, and again, it's a lot of people, a lot of moving pieces. Is there anything else anyone wants to discuss?
The press release that Mike did last week on 100% renewable, that should really go to our committee. Can we make the policy decision? It's not a, that should come to us.
Yeah, he called me and told me about it after
after it happened.
Yeah, and I think it's an insult, especially you two who are very active.
I was glad for the determination, but I had a little bit of the same reaction.
Yeah, it should have been included. Maybe not everybody, but there should have been certain legislators and people in the county government, in the county elected officials included. Personally, I think that's a policy decision. I don't think that's a decision that the executive can or should make. I mean, we appropriate the funds for it.
Yeah.
And maybe we should ask Kathy to look into it. And I'm not opposed to it, but you know what? It goes back to other things. Show us the numbers. Show us the figures. How much we're paying now? How many kilowatt hours? How much is it going to cost? Put it down on paper, because then if it costs $800,000 or it costs, say, just $800,000, it's on paper and recorded. I think
you raise a very interesting point, and I definitely I was thrilled to hear about it, but I had a pause as well in terms of the policy question. Mike told me that, which shocked me, that I'm not 100% positive that I'm right on this number, but he told me the whole thing was cost $20,000 a year.
$22,000.
And he was going to task a group with making it neutral in the budget, finding that.
Who did I for you? Have the directive?
So I found it. I find it shocking that it would only cost $27.
Well, that's why. Put everything in paper. Give us copies of the electric bills today, and then let's see copies of the electric bills in 2 years.
Well, and I'll ask for.
But that's what people don't want to do. Is sit in here held accountable.
That we begin to start generating.
And we are talking, I kept bringing up solar because it's something that in my previous term, you'll recall, something I was working on. I keep hearing, and I'm going to sit down with someone in the office, because I keep hearing that they're looking at a solar farm, but I don't know, again, if I could point out that it is to some degree a policy decision, but it's one I'm grateful to have happened, but I'm curious what is happening, what's the stage, what's the...
No, and I know Kathy wants to speak, but Trace, it's a great thing, but you can't let something happen next time that you don't like and say, well, that's a policy decision. If it's our decision, it's our decision whether we like it or don't like it. You can't say, well, it's something we're happy about, so it's okay that it didn't go through the legislature. And then next time it's something we don't like, you can't make a stink, because you can't just pick and choose when the legislature is going to make decisions.
Now,
so,
in the county, is there any wind?
And you hear everything. You don't have wind.
No, but do we have any? We don't have any in this county, do we?
Wind generation.
We don't have that I know of.
That's what. Yeah, because Mike specifically said.
Oh, it's a purchase agreement.
Okay.
You know, so we're purchasing.
So it
could be
in
the other side of the world.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Well, that's where those transmission constraints start kicking in. You know, there's a lot of wind in the north and the west, and that's why we have to be open-minded about, you know, the attempt to unblock the transmission constraints. Because then the cost of getting the wind here will come down. But, you know, one of the really positive things about the Nebelee, other than the jobs that it was or if it's still viable, would create, is that was going to be a 2-megawatt solar system, 2,000 kilowatt solar system. That would have been the largest system. They were required to provide 10% on site. And they said this far exceeded that. But one of the things we're working on, I've signed up to be a participant in the reforming the energy vision for New York State that the Public Service Commission is working on. And, ultimately, we want to find ways of generating a lot of our own electricity within Ulster County and creating microgrids and resiliency and, you know.
This resolution we just passed does help start that, because that's solar panels and a lot of different things on business and houses, so we're certainly moving in a stuff.
And EIC can be used.
Well, that's
what we're doing. Yeah. So I think
you know, we're moving in that direction, but it, you know, it's like pulling teeth. We've been doing a certain system for so long, it's so ingrained, that making the transition is, even though it makes sense, and ultimately it's going to be very cost effective, because once we put wind and solar and, you know, capture more water where it makes sense and have good storage systems, we're going to be far less reliant on centralized large facilities or facilities that are at distant places. And so we're right in the middle of that.
But how disappointing, as you brought up earlier with the new capacity zone, that, you know, that the effect of that is that they're bringing online all these, you know, physically old.
I think it's having a regressive effect or backwards effect, in that the generators that are providing that capacity are old fossil fuel plants, maybe Cricket Valley, a new fossil fuel plant, and then Entergy is getting money to keep Indian Point running, and they're not providing additional capacity, but they're going to get paid.
You know what, Domenico, I agree with everything you're saying, but this guy wants to put a windmill and it gets shot down. So after a while, you're going to say to yourself, well, waste my time.
Yeah, because who
is... Judge Hirsch. Judge Hirsch from Taxi.
Oh,
okay. The town of Hardenberg wants you to put up a windmill.
Right, right.
And the town board and the town and the county planning board, and Martin Stanley shot it down. So you're the guy that wants to do it. So you know what? What do we make that
town?
The whole town's going to have against it.
Right.
You want to put windmills or against it? So after a while, you know what? Burn the fuck.
But wait, I got
it. How long are you going to fight and try to get stuff done?
Well, yeah, but
Dennis was at our meeting, I believe. Was that last month?
Yeah, he said politics played a part.
But he said that the county planning board advised that the locality accept it. The county planning board said, let them put the that's absolutely what he said. And he said, that's when he said, okay.
Oh, I thought they made a different recommendation with certain caveats.
But that is
not the original proposal.
Was my understanding.
Okay, then.
All right, we're getting a little off.
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, Kathy, do you
want to take on that? If I could, just, I think the county does have some policy. There was some discussion of this in the online news blogs on that executive's announcement. The climate smart pledge that goes back to 2004 and an energy reducing carbon, something from 2008.
Yeah.
Purchasing for all of our county supplies and all of that. So, but I think it's good for this group, especially, to be proactive and push for some more of those.
Yeah.
I also think that below a certain amount, I had in mind 50,000, then it does become more just a implementation, and it's not deemed to be a policy situation. Those numbers is what I really can speak to. They do make sense in terms of the cost increase that the green ESCOs are offering to businesses and privates, and in Woodstock they had been pricing out for them how much it would cost if they did something like this just for Woodstock, and I think it was about $1,300 or $1,500 through one of the green ESCOs, not the municipal, which is a better rate that the county is getting. So for Woodstock's energy needs at that level, the county's energy needs, I think those figures are 7,000 for this year and 16,000 for next year make sense in terms of what I see of what green energy is now.
Are you saying 1,300 for the town of Woodstock against the 16,000 for the...
The difference in the energy usage.
Just even using those examples, I would be so surprised if we only use 10 times the energy of Woodstock. I mean, we have the county jail. It
should be in paper. And when does the 50,000 threshold hit?
We should get it in paper. I mean, I think we should get it.
Here, so they seem to be well under it, but... Sure, I think they probably have those.
Yeah. And I think one of the benefits of getting it in paper is, I mean, my reaction when I heard 22,000 for the whole county, because
I mean, I was seeing a collection of the whole all power bills in one place very recently, but there was a time when I was looking at it very closely, and it was much less than it is now, and it was shockingly high. We've been millions of dollars. So that $20,000 out of millions of dollars of bills, to me, to make it officially public and to circulate how that came about is a benefit, because the people in the public sector will say, wow, to do that for just my house is only going to cost $100 a year.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I did it. I don't currently have electric that I'm paying for where I'm staying under my name, but at the house I was living in previously, I switched, and it was less than $60 a year.
Yes, so that's a really positive thing.
Well, I'd like to suggest, since this is the Energy Committee, that maybe we have someone come in who explains how this works. When you turn on a light switch, you can't say, oh, that's wind electricity I'm using. I mean, electricity is electricity. So when I asked a question for her, I heard we bought credits. Well, what exactly does that mean? How verifiable is it that you're really getting what you think you're getting? And how does that system work? And what's the accountability for it? I wonder if there's someone who could come in from one of these companies and explain all that to us.
Yeah. I think I will look into it. I think it's a good
idea. I'm careful about having somebody from a company because the
if you know someone else, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be, if I'm not mistaken, is it Public Service Commission that publishes an independent report of all of these. And I once did that research and wrote an article, so I can find out. But I don't want to get, there are a lot of experts, and I don't want to have one say, well, this is what we do. We want somebody who manages them to say what it is. And I think,
We can have sufficient knowledge to do what others on this topic that's becoming more frequent.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that just on the issue of energy, I don't know about all of you, but I foresee, and something, well, it's getting late now, but I think it's something that we're going to have to continue to talk about, just because I've never gotten so many constituent calls. I mean, never in all my years, which is not so many, but all my years as a legislator, as on electricity bills now. People are absolutely affected. You know, they're affected. You know, you hear the stories from before, but now what's happening with the energy bills, and it's going to get worse with the capacity zone. So I think it's something that we want to think about as a committee, about how we're going to tackle and what information we think we need as a committee, both to educate ourselves, but also to then educate other legislators to be able to help our constituents and advocate for them.
Maybe we should get a professional in here from the solar energy and just say, because I get a newsletter from a newspaper from up in Cape Cod. The town of Brewster has, like, $1.6 million a year in electricity costs. They get 40% from their own wind and solar. And they were going to build more at the transfer station, but they just bought it from the Cape Wind. So they don't need to build them because they're buying it from another organization that makes them. Let's get somebody like that. I mean, and here's...
And that's some of what Man is talking about, microgrids, I mean, as well.
And that cost them maybe $7 million to build their thing, but when you're saving...
Two areas that are so underdeveloped and other places are doing it are landfills and parking lots. The parking lots serve another purpose. They capture the sun and they shade the cars. And, you know, that's how Germany got to be doing 74% renewables, is by investing.
Did you see that thing on solar collecting roadways? that generate electricity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks like a puzzle.
Yeah.
You put it together, and as the cars drive over the things, it recharges the cars, right?
Well, no, it captures the energy, the roadways themselves. It's an experiment that's been done and works. And you can use...
Well, just they're just for houses and everything else.
No, it's just... They can build roadways. All these, they've done a demonstration project where the roadway itself is a solar collector.
I saw that. But that's for when they capture that solar... Where does that electric go? To the houses and businesses? I thought it was for the cars to help the cars keep running. I looked at it.
Yeah, it's, it wasn't really explained where it goes, but the concept is that a roadway can actually capture it and make it into electricity, which is phenomenal if you think about what happens if you do that, you know, in a really large scale basis.
It sounds like we might want to over time, and you know, there's no other place, even in the executive branch, but they've talked to Dennis and Amanda about this. Energy kind of rests with us, so maybe we'll start with about the green ESCOs and how they work and who oversees them. And not just have them, come to us. If we're going to have somebody come, let other legislators and other people hear it, and then we'll all get educated. Because I follow this stuff as closely as I can, and I don't have a lot of the answers.
As we should be privileged to afford someone.
Yeah.
Well, let's come here.
Let's start here. Yeah, and then...
Thomas, oh my God, this is so complex.
Let's start with the green ESCOs, because that was the first question, and keep lists of other things. But I would like to sort of formally request the background information on the 100% renewable. You know, who's providing it, how much, how did we get...
What are we paying?
So that we all understand. I think we all really support it, but then if people ask us questions, we'll have the information.
So we should ask for the basis for making the statement.
Well, I'll ask for all the particulars. I'll reject
it.
In writing. And I'm also going to ask for the annual power bills electric bills per building. Just so because we're the energy committee, we should probably see that. We should be looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Fuel, electricity, so on. So I'll ask for that as well for the next meeting. Now, can we talk about the next meeting very, very quickly, but last things. Okay, so... congratulations to Krista on getting elected.
Oh, yeah.
Elected.
To the Board of Works Department.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so now we have a scheduling conflict for Krista, but I would like to keep Krista as the clerk of the committee if we can. So I sent that email out. I think I heard back from everyone except for you, Rich, and Ken Rowe. I sent it out a while ago.
I didn't find out when the Cornell Cooperative...
I'll send it to you, but I did send it to you, but I didn't hear from you.
Maybe you went to my spam or somebody.
But so here's what we're looking at, what seems the most, make the most sense, if it works for everybody, is we're currently, as you know, the Tuesday before caucus, the day we're looking at it that has no scheduling conflict on the books, so it means you don't have a scheduling conflict, is Monday before caucus. Does that day work for everyone in the committee? Okay.
I can find out when
Cornell Board meeting is. Okay. So you'll let me know. Now, for July, Chris is on vacation, and that Monday's my birthday. I'd rather not.
But that's July 1st.
So, no, we'll keep the meeting when it is, but you said you can't make the meeting.
I'm going away July 3rd, and I'm gone Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the whole next week.
Okay, so it doesn't matter. You're
I'm back 13th. If you did it the week before, July 1st, I could be here.
Where you go?
Keep going.
July 1st. Isn't that officially the July 4th weekend? Yeah. That one's going to be a tough one to get through.
Mm-hmm. You can't do it yet. July 4th weekend starts on the 4th and goes...
It starts on the
4th.
Friday.
And I'm leaving
first. Is everyone better with the 1st? We could move it to the 1st. Are you available on the 1st? You've been... You're gone the week of the 7th.
Yeah, I'm not here.
No, I'm not this side tonight.
Okay, so I'm going to circulate. not for July, for August, we're definitely moving from Monday before caucus. That starts in August. July's meeting, I will reach out to everyone. As of now, we're where we are, which is Wednesday, it is Tuesday before caucus. So we're right now on the 8th, but I will reach out to everyone, and if we can make it work to get you there, I'll also see. But I have not spoken to Ken about it. He didn't respond to the email either. So I will, in short order, do that, because so it doesn't come up too quick.
And then could I just get clarification on August, if we go to Monday, which I know you said the Monday before the caucus.
It'd be the second Monday.
Second Monday.
Okay. All right.
It could have been younger. What day is
it? Yeah, I think that's right.
Usually it's the third Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it's August 11th, but I won't.
Okay.
When is the meeting? Next Tuesday?
Yeah.
Yeah, so usually the third Tuesday is meeting.
Yeah. But the first week is normally committee meeting. Next week is caucus. Next week is work session.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So and the Monday, the Monday of committee meetings, I feel like was the other Monday that we potentially could have a meeting, but there was a room conflict because there's another committee meeting. I don't remember which one, but none of us are on it. So, but we'll try to work out July.
If you can.
It'd be fine with me to move it a week earlier if everybody's good with that. But we'll see where everyone's at. Especially if it like loosens up the people. There's more of them going on vacation right now, right too. So, okay. Anything else that anyone wants to discuss?
Good meeting.
Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Very second.
Okay.
All in favor?
Oh, all right.
Great. Thank you.